Commissioner Cooley?
Present.
Commissioner Stanley, or Anderson, sorry.
Present.
Commissioner Kilkenny? Commissioner Killian? Commissioner Peterson?
She might be late.
Commissioner Sykes? Can they hear us? Do we have the...
Let's see.
Are we unmuted?
Oh, no, we're not unmuted. Oopsies. Commissioner Sykes?
Here.
Commissioner Smith?
Here.
Commissioner Thompson?
You may want to do Kilkenny again.
Recording in progress.
Commissioner Kilkenny?
Here.
Okay.
I'm chair, I see.
Pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
In your packet, you'll find the drafts to July 25th meeting. Hopefully you have time to read those prior to right now.
Just for the record, it's Michaela's favorite thing to do. No, it's not. It's not easy.
So I'd entertain a motion to accept as presented.
I move we accept the minutes as read. Last meeting.
I would second. First and second. Any, oh my gosh, my brain, sorry. I was multitasking here for a second. Trying to remember what to know. Second.
Great.
All in favor? Say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Accepted as written. Hello, my name is Stacy Ekstrom. I'm the chair of the Planning Commission. We have one hearing tonight to review, and that's conditional use permit CUP N33719. Persons who wish to provide testimony may do so orally or in writing. Testimony and evidence must be directed toward the applicable criteria. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the decision maker and the parties an opportunity to respond to an issue precludes an appeal to the Board of Commissioners on that issue. Please sign the sheet in the back of the room or make a note on chat if anyone is participating via Zoom. If you would like to present testimony, please speak only when identified by the chair and begin by giving your name and address. If you have exhibits for our consideration, please provide a copy to the planning staff. If you would like to request the commission hold open a record or continue a hearing, you must make that request before the public portion of the hearing is closed. The hearing will be concluded in the following order. I will first ask staff to summarize the application and review the issues and explain the next step. I will invite the applicant to present testimony, followed by persons in favor, in opposition, and then neutral. At that time, the applicant will be allowed time to rebuttal and to answer questions from the commission. Then the commission will deliberate, close the public hearing, and accept the motions to vote. So we'll now hear the conditional use permit review, CUP N337, Joshua and Shannon Carl, applicants and owners.
And Katie is presenting on that.
Okay.
Yep. Good evening. Katie Keeley, I'm the compliance planner from Morrow County. We're going to be doing a 2023 compliance review for a conditional use permit that was obtained in 2019. This is to review updated conditions for the conditional use permit for home occupation. Applicant is Josh and Shannon Carl, as well as the owner of the property. Property is 70270 Coonsey Lane in Boardman. Assessor's map 4 North 25 East 21, tax lot 200. It's located off of Coonsey Lane, adjacent to the intersection of Coonsey and South Main Street of Boardman. The 2023 August update for the findings, background information, Planning Department has observed and documented the removal of several vehicles from the property. The applicant has shown progress over the last several months and has maintained open communication. Mr. Carl is working on permits for Hermiston property, and once able to do so, will move a majority of the vehicles to that property for storage. Public Works has confirmed, and I've included them in your packet, two approved access permits for the property. The applicant has applied for a zoning permit to replace an existing pole barn that was on the property when he initially applied for the permit in 2019. This will be for out-of-site storage of vehicles. Applicant is currently operating two different tow trucks from that location, but he is the only driver that is driving out of that location currently. I'm going to skip ahead to page 27, where the conditions of approval are, and we'll go over the conditions of approval. First one is all loading and unloading of vehicles shall take place between the hours of 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. Applicant understands the hours of operation expected of him and is complying. Storage of any vehicle as related to the occupation shall not exceed 30 days in duration. It has been observed and documented that numerous vehicles and RVs have been removed from the property over the course of the last 4 months. Applicant has applied for the zoning permit, like I had said, for a structure to put an existing structure for the property to store vehicles in, as well as that property in Hermiston with Umatilla County Planning for a land partition of 5 acres and a use permit. Once obtained, he would be able to move more of the vehicles to that location. There are still vehicles on the property in Boardman, but he has made a great effort to remove some of those vehicles, and in doing so, getting that property in Hermiston, those other vehicles would be removed at that time. Number three, the applicant must obtain either an access permit or a letter indicating that no access permit is required. Mr. Carl has obtained two approved access permits from Public Works. And the other one that was number five, any person employed at the location will be limited to immediate family members only. Mr. Carl only has two trucks in operation from the Boardman location currently, and he is the only employee at that location at this time. Updated decision of the Planning Commission. Based on above finding, planning staff provides the Planning Commission with three options. One, find that the applicant is not in compliance with the original permit and the conditions of approval and revoke the permit. Two, find that the applicant can meet the conditions of approval and renew for 1 year, or continue the hearing and allow time for permittee to come into compliance with the conditions of approval. My recommendation to the Planning Commission is to choose option two and find the applicant can meet the conditions of approval here, and I will keep check on the property and make sure that those vehicles are getting moved. And again, in 1 year, I would be doing a review again because of the conditional use permit and would be able to see if that is still in compliance. And Stephen did have some updated photos of the property. In the photos from April, there was a considerable, I don't know where he went, considerable amount more vehicles on the property. And now there's actually sections of the property towards the back that you can see through now. Landon and I went out yesterday and went around the back side of the property, and there are several vehicles removed. There's RVs removed. There's a big mobile home that was breaking down that's been removed. So there's been a lot of effort made.
Thank you, Katie.
Yes.
Now I invite applicants and proponents at this time to present testimony and evidence.
The only one thing that
name and address.
Sorry. Could you come up, Mr. Carl? Oh, thank you.
Josh Carl, 70270 Quincy William, Boardman, Oregon, 97818. The only thing that I need to change on that is the fact that my son is networking.
Okay.
So he moves up here from Portland, and he's working with me now. So.
And that's fine, because it's a direct relative.
Family, yeah. And he's the one who's going to be helping with the yard and Hermiston. And I turned in, or I went to turn in the application that we had filled out, and they informed me that survey needed to be done prior. So I contacted the survey guy, and he's 2 months out, but he's going to make a preliminary drawing for it so it can get the ball rolling. So I've talked to the guy, had the property owner sign the paper off and everything for dividing the property and all that. So it's on them. So I'm hoping to be, hopefully, by the end of the year, onto the new property. So,
okay. Yeah. Does any the commission have any questions? Thank you.
Just how are we keeping track of length of storage time? Is there something you do to check on that?
I can, and that was something that was discussed in the last planning commission, I believe, by Commissioner Seitz, was if the applicant would be willing to have me be able to come onto the property and check vehicles to make sure that if they had been towed, if then they were gone within that certain amount of time. And that was something that I was okay with doing, and Josh is okay with me doing as well. And I think
there's only one car that's there past 30 days right now, and it's because it was due yesterday.
So. Yeah. Okay. So there's a lot of progress.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great, thank you. Any opponents at this time? That makes it easy. Any other interested parties that have any comments or questions?
Well, I would just say that Katie's led the effort on this and has done a nice job. I think all of us have pitched in and really appreciate that Mr. Carl has come in. I mean, we sat down a couple of times and helped fill out his application for Umatilla County so he could get moving on that, and that's where he can, in an industrial zone, store lots of vehicles, which Katie said. So I think he's making a lot of progress, and hopefully it hasn't been too much of a hardship. Mm-hmm. He still has a lot of vehicles stored there, but if he has a appropriate place in Umatilla County in an industrial zone.
As soon as it gets approved, everything's going to go. So there'll be like maybe 2-3 tow trucks there, that sort of stuff.
And did we also touch on the zoning permit for that Quonset building? We decided to hold off on that.
We were holding off. If a person is out of compliance with code, we cannot approve any zoning permits. So by finding that he can meet the conditions for approval and renew for a year, this will make it to where he's no longer in code violation with me, and he would be we'd be able to move forward with the zoning permit for that pole barn as well for storage on his property in Boardman too.
We didn't want to approve it and take his money and
if this then be out
yeah. forward. So
yeah. And when will I know about that?
Tonight.
Oh, okay.
At this time, I'd invite anybody who would like to continue the hearing or hold the record open. Okay. If not, close the public hearing. Any additional questions to the staff from the commission? At this time, I would call for a motion.
Katie laid those out nicely on page 27 of your packet. And her recommendation was
number two.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we go with number two. When we find the applicant can meet the conditions of approval and renew for 1 year.
Thank you. Wait a second. And motion's been brought up. Second?
Seconded.
Well, we got a second. Everyone approved, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passed.
Can I ask for clarification? There's your answer, Mr. Carr. Does the Planning Commission want to see the renewal in a year or defer that to staff? So if he's making progress and is in compliance,
it's good just to staff. You got this far, just keep it rolling.
Excellent. Perfect. That's great. So,
I'll email you about your zoning permit.
Oh, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for coming. Thanks for all the hard work, Josh.
Yep.
Well, we are a little ahead of schedule. Okay.
We're never ahead of schedule.
That looks pretty tight ship. Okay. We had scheduled a presentation on the rural transit equity, and Maddie Phillips is here, but we were guessing, so I called him, told him to call in at 6:30. So
oh, okay.
do you want to
we'll just skip ahead to
the item C?
Yep.
Oh, good. I just read these over. So I think I shared legislative updates after the 2021 session. What I included in your packet is what I use primarily, and it's a report dated July 13th. I think there was a later version dated August, and that's the state agency, DLCD. It's a report to their commission on all the legislative items that happened. And then beginning on page 76 of your packet is a spreadsheet, and it's the summary of legislation that may or may not apply to Morrow County. So if it's all right with you, it doesn't take a whole lot of time, I'll just kind of run through those. So the first one, House Bill 2001, is the housing needs analysis. It doesn't have a lot of direct impact to counties in general. It does with cities and with the housing production strategy the cities did in 2019, and then again last year. I think they're in pretty good shape, the Willow Creek Valley cities. The Irrigan and Boardman said, we're busy. We don't really have time to do that. So I just worked with those cities on that. House Bill 3395, the middle column, I think we'll have to change a few items in our code. It requires to allow housing in some commercial zones inside an urban growth boundary. It will not apply to very many. As I said here, it will be four parcels in the Irrigan urban growth boundary and probably two in Heppner, and that might be it. But technically, we'll need to do some sort of a code update to address, again, housing in commercial zones where it's allowed, and to approve temporary emergency shelters on rural residential lands when homelessness is 18% of the total state population. Implementation of that isn't very clear, and I'm not exactly sure where to get that, so that's kind of on hold. That's why I said it's not very clear. It also directs county to accept assurance for provision of water sewer award letter from public funding if development is for affordable housing. That was probably someplace some county didn't accept that. And it also included some grant funding. But we'll have to take a little bit closer look at our code to make a few changes there. And what I'm proposing is that we come back to the commission in October, and Chair Ekstrom and I talk about this a little bit, with some actual code languages. Then we can talk about them informally, and then if they're good with you, then we could move towards formal adoption at the December 4th meeting, I think it is. We don't meet in November. The next item that would require a code update, and I just thought it would be interesting for you to see kind of the gamut of things. You can see that the whole legislative session focused really heavily on housing. On page 77 of your packet, it talks about green infrastructure and solar siting. That won't require a code amendment, but there will be a rule advisory committee, which I may be involved in at the state level, just because we have a lot of solar siting and there's a few counties with experience. He'll probably be involved in that process. If we bump down to House Bill 3179, that changes the jurisdiction for solar siting facilities. So we approved one. We've approved a couple. One was out at the airport, which was not on EFU ground. We had one just about a year ago on Madison Ranches that was withdrawn. It changes the threshold based on that acreage requirement there, and it also replaces the 2019 acreage, which we hadn't codified anyway. So now, I think this is a really wonky way to have land use law, because it's statute what gives this county authority, and it's based on acreage, which is, there isn't any other sort of land use where it's supersided, where it's based on an acreage. So if land is in high value, if the solar facility is in high value land and it's under 240 acres, a county can approve it. If it's cultivated or medium range solar type, up to 2,560, and if it's other land, like the poorer quality, it can be up to 3,840 acres. So we've gone through a couple of those, really the only changes, and Landon is already working on that, so he's actually cutting and pasting where our code needs to be updated. So a few of these things are underway. House Bill 3197, yes. Yes.
So, can you clarify a little bit what the different high value versus cultivated certain soil types? What do those things mean? For instance, when solar farms are beginning to be located around the North Lex area, and would that be cultivated certain soil types, or would that be high value?
I think most of those are in that mid category, because they grow a crop, and it's also most of our, a large part of our counties in an American viticulture area. And if you're in that AVA designation and you have a certain soil type and you have a certain aspect, so how the slope of your soil is positioned, and you're in that AVA, you might be high value soil. So I can share, I'll make a note of that, is I'll share the matrix to drill down a little bit more detail on what that means.
Yeah, those descriptions seem kind of arbitrary. Curious how our county fit into that. I would, to me, I mean, high value would be set pivot.
Would be what?
Would be, you know, center pivot here. Gaze your ground, right. Is how I would determine high value, but I don't know what the state means by that.
Yeah, I will. It's pretty complicated to explain, and I'm in the business, right? So there's several different categories. So if it's class one or two soil, it's automatically high value. It might also be high value, again, if it's in an AVA area with certain soil aspect. If you're growing a perennial crop, it's high value. And for soil only, for solar only, there's this whole section in the law, the state law, that has definition of arable and non-arable and some other things. It doesn't apply to anything else that we do as county planners, but it does to solar. So I'll bring some of that, because somebody at the state level developed a pretty good spreadsheet to better understand that. Okay. Good. Any other questions about that? Let's see. House Bill 3197, I'm still, I still need to review that final language. The idea was that a local government, a county or a city, wouldn't adopt standards that are subjective that would lead to rejecting an application for housing. I don't know that we have those, although we did at our staff meeting this morning talk about some code changes to our mobile home standards. Landon's going to be working on that as well for next month. So then moving on, House Bill 3630, I mentioned it. It's not directly, won't require a code or a plan amendment, but it directs the Department of Energy to have a statewide energy strategy and support energy resiliency planning in every county, but it will have some effects on the administrative rules for solar. The next one, Senate Bill 80, is what is referred to the wildfire bill. And those were put into place after the really terrible fires in September of 2020, particularly Southern Oregon and some of Central Oregon. Lots of housing was lost. The state is now adopting a comprehensive wildfire map, and it's a risk map, so it'll be a low, a moderate, high, and extreme. And there's actually a work session with the board, with local commissioners. Stephen's going to be our lead on that because he'll be the one doing the mapping. And there will be different standards that counties will have to adopt. But the most important, significant piece is if you're in a high-risk category, what would that mean, Chair Ekstrom? Yeah. And she's in the insurance business, yeah. So the state issued a set of maps a year and a half ago and sent direct notice to lots of property owners. You probably got some of those in your mail. Not just in forest zones, but in other zones. There was so much pushback that they pulled those maps back and said, we'll take a closer look. And I don't know what those are like. But
because they had cities in them. In those maps.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, cities can, I mean, look at Lahaina.
But that was the big pushback because people were like, why are we getting this if we're, one, they're right next to a fire department thing, so they're getting a scare tactic is what, that's why they got a huge pushback on that too. Because insurance companies already have a wildfire map, throw it at the map, and then, I mean, really, it doesn't have any rhyme or reason a lot of times, but they don't put a lot of thought into it. They need to look deeper. So hopefully this mapping will go better than their last try at it.
That's the idea. Yeah, and Stephen and I think a couple of our commissioners are going to a meeting of several of the Eastside counties to look at the maps, and they'll take input from counties who know the area much better for sure. So moving, Senate Bill 85, if you're in the cattle business, this will interest you. It changes the county's role when confined animal feeding operations are approved. It allows the county to require a buffer or a setback for large CAFOs that would be adjacent to legal residences. It's just one more box that we have to check. We have historically approved, it's called the LUX, is the Land Use Compatibility Statement. So it's part of the state agency coordination, so a CAFO permit is processed by Oregon Department of Agriculture before they will approve it. It has to go to the local planning office. And I think what we might do is in these sections here, 3.010B, as adopt some standards. I don't know of any CAFOs that are adjacent to residences, but there could be some in the future because the CAFOs around here are mostly pretty far away, but there are some smaller CAFOs that are closer to residential areas. That's still, the details of that are still being worked out in Salem. The next two bills, Senate Bill 644 and Senate Bill 1013, 644 allows counties to approve accessory dwelling units in the rural residential zone. Stephen, do you have that map handy while I'm talking? We were talking at our staff meeting today, we need to adopt the definition for an accessory dwelling unit and a, what was it, mini home?
Mm-hmm. Tiny home?
Tiny home. We don't have a definition of that. If Stephen is able to pull up a map to show our rural residential properties, this warrants some discussion by the Planning Commission. I'm concerned about accessory dwelling units in places where people already don't have good drinking water. I mean, theoretically, you could double the capacity if every property in a rural residential zone had an accessory dwelling unit. Or an RV, you could easily double the capacity.
Could I speak on this?
Please,
this
yeah.
is one of my first calls to you yes. on accessory dwellings
yeah.
a couple years ago. So. My theory is in Morrow County, we don't have any elder care facilities available. I mean, we do have one in Heffern, but it's very limited. And in my personal situation, it probably doesn't apply to everybody, but there are situations where you have a parent or a loved one who needs a place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And we don't have that
recording
option
stopped.
In our county.
Recording
so
in progress.
I understand that I totally agree there's a total big need for the zoning and the consideration of what the property can do.
We lost internet. Like everything on my computer just went blank.
Oh.
Well, it said that recording stopped, and then it said recording started.
It
Says it's recording.
John, can you hear us? Is he frozen?
He's frozen.
Yeah,
something happened with our internet.
Oh my gosh.
So do we...
Hold on.
Okay. It's connecting, Stephen. It looks
anybody
like...
want a cookie?
When all this starts.
No, I want a sandwich. Tell me why.
If I had bread, I'd give it to you.
I don't know. They have bread. That's what they told me.
Who doesn't have bread?
The sandwich people. The grocery store.
They were out of bread to make a sandwich.
I was like, how are you out of bread?
I don't know.
That's what I looked at him like I was in a different language. I was like,
I'm good. We even have bread in my house.
At the store.
It's open.
I would love to bring home next to my house.
It is after the flood?
Yeah.
Good.
She's independent now, so she won't always be independent. She'll always have that sense of independency, but... just needs someone to look out for her.
On the accessory dwelling unit. Mm.
Do we need to wait to finish our conversation?
Yeah.
That was just
I have
a personal
a few
side note.
People
that
might
too. Mine lives in Alaska. She doesn't want to live down here full time. But if she needs to be here, she needs to be here.
Our internet's kaput.
I was going to say. Looks
the
like,
whole thing?
Yeah, the earth
yeah,
has an X
down.
Mark on it.
Isn't that normal?
Well, every place I've been this week it's happened, so I might have brought
it. I was showing a map, and I was like, okay, nobody cares about the map. Hello? Can you guys hear me? Nothing.
Oh, yeah, we're, like, we're patiently waiting for the map.
So you heard me swearing?
Why won't anyone listen?
I don't know what to do if somebody's... I don't have a hotspot on my phone. Does anybody have a hotspot?
I do, but I don't know.
Wayne's asking. Yeah, I was going to say,
hi, Wayne. He's like, what just happened?
We were in
Farmstead.
No, because if we don't do it in here, you all are not going to be able to connect.
Please.
You
can try mine.
So we're going to have to host.
We're trying to decide right now. An unknown error occurred. Please join this meeting from your browser.
At least we're not hearing them.
I know.
We'll just join from the browser.
No, I'm in my office in the house, which is just
so
ridiculous.
So if we would try
and...
So I relocate to a new place. The internet... have internet. The place we have it through says I can't do my new office.
Could you just ask everybody to hold tight? Somebody,
Michaela
has a hotspot on her phone, and we're going to try to reconnect to the meeting.
I finally went through Verizon. I get this thing. It works 5 minutes.
Okay.
Then the box, like,
Yes, let's do that. I'll put you on speakerphone, Wayne.
But it won't. For down there, there's no reason why I shouldn't have. It's downtown.
Phone audio, their internet went down, and they're trying to reestablish it.
Okay. He's got everybody in.
Oh. Yeah, it's been.
How's
your
internet?
That's a tough one.
Mary's.
Mary's
Dose. Like
Mary's
Dose.
Yeah, that one's good.
I like your hair, but.
From my hair to my house?
No,
Mary Dose.
Oh, no, it's about an hour and a half.
Hour?
Do you go every day?
I do not.
Okay. Mary's Dose.
I spent a lot of time because I was stupid and decided to
Mary's
paint
Dose
it.
Is the one.
This one?
I try not to. Daniel Holtz works for me. Yeah.
He's out of college.
Yes, he's out of college.
Is that our security key?
No, it's this one right here.
On the phone.
Plus
25. He'd be 26, almost 27. Lauren just turned 27. She was in his class.
Okay, yeah. So, yes. So he works for me. But it's been a rough. Today was a rough day. I just got to move.
I think you guys might be back.
Through.
I see Morrill County Swanny.
Oh, it just popped in then?
Well, the internet should have come back.
Oh, it must be Stephen. Is it you, Stephen? Oh, Stephen. That's Stephen. So he is. Oh, are we connected now?
On the wireless one. That's not the regular internet.
So would we have to dial in through that, Stephen?
Okay, it just said recording in progress, which it said recording ended, and but now it's. Am I showing it where you're recording now?
Okay, we're trying to zoom back in. I think we need to have a hotspot. We're using your phone.
Yeah,
thank you.
It sounds like the internet came back.
Join.
There you are.
But if the internet came back, wouldn't there be the world instead of the wireless one? That's just what it does on my computer.
Looks like you're starting to come back.
Okay.
Recording in progress.
There we go.
Let's see if it works.
Oh, there's Madeline.
Can you hear us?
Yeah.
We can now.
Okay, I'll hang
up. Yes, we can.
Okay.
Goodness sakes. Okay, we were moving ahead of schedule, so Dr. Costi, Madeline, and Grace. So we skipped over and we're going over legislation. We were just talking about Senate Bill 644 and Senate Bill 1013 about accessory dwelling units and recreational vehicles on certain properties. So Commissioner Killian had some ideas.
I just thought that if we could come up with zoning that was practical and reasonable, maybe once we get all this water stuff figured out and how we're going to address it, maybe that would come into play. But I do think there's a huge need in our county for accessory dwelling zoning.
Especially when you have 2 acres or more.
Yes, mm-hmm. When okay. It is reasonable.
Okay.
Might do so.
And Commissioner?
Should we go back to go let them put a pin in this and go to them in case we have further issues?
That's super nice. I love that. So the chair just said we're going to pause on our legislative update and turn it over to the team at Eastern Oregon University and Madeline Phillips, and I will introduce them. They're on the phone. So at the end of June, we wrapped up, although there are a few outstanding things and they're nice enough to continue working on it. So on the phone is Grace Donovan, who's the director of the Rural Engagement and Vitality Center at Eastern Oregon University, and they contracted directly with the state of Oregon to work on this project, and it's the legislative assembly prior to 2023 set aside money to look at access to transit for traditionally underserved populations. And we submitted an application to Madeline Phillips, who is on the phone. She's moved roles within the Department of Land Conservation and Development now, but still has an interest in this and has come back tonight to do this presentation. And then along with Grace Donovan, Dr. Daniel Costi, who's faculty at Eastern Oregon University, teaches the a lot of different things, but also teaches a Master in Public Policy, Master in Public Administration program, and was in charge of the survey we did. So can I turn it over to you, Madeline, to tee it up a little bit more, and then Dr. Costi and Grace will talk from there?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tara. Chair Ekstrom, commissioners, it's a pleasure to be with you this evening. My name is Madeline Phillips. As I was introduced, I was the program manager for what is now a pilot program, the Rural Transportation Equity Program. Tamara gave a quick overview of what that program intended to explore, which was working with community members that typically don't participate in some of our planning activities, and to work to engage them on topics related to transportation needs. And in Morrow County, as you're well aware, there is quite a bit of work that you all have been doing around transit development planning as a component of your transportation system plan as a county. This is very exciting work from all of us at the state level as an opportunity to engage, especially with rural communities who are exploring ways to serve some of their underserved community members with transit and transportation options. Our work, I may have omitted, I work at the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and our focus has been to build capacity in your region, and part of that capacity building opportunity was to engage with folks over at Eastern Oregon University, particularly Dr. Costi and Grace Donovan, who is the new executive director of the Rural Engagement and Vitality Program. So my hope is tonight that you'll get an overview of some of the work that we completed over the last year, and then talk a little bit about how this work interfaces with the work that you do as a planning commission for the county, and think about how you might use this work that we prepared in some of your future efforts as a county to serve some of the folks we engaged with. So thanks for the time. Grace, I'll hand it off to you.
Great.
All right, thank you so much, Maddie. Hello, commissioners. Pleasure to be here with you guys again. We came and presented some preliminary results in June, and now we're going to be focusing on more of the final recommendations. So I'll go ahead and share my screen. We've prepared a presentation for you guys today.
As Grace is pulling up her screen, I would just, Madeline said it, but I'll just put a finer point on it, that even though the focus of this research and the outreach was transit and access to transit, it really is a model for how we do really any planning. So you, as commissioners, spend most of your time reviewing permit applications, but when we do have the time to do things like code updates or plan updates, this really is a model for looking at how we engage members of the community who we don't normally see involved in this kind of stuff. Thanks for allowing me that. Go ahead, Grace.
Yeah, thank you, Tamara. So just to kind of outline a little bit of what we're going to be going over today, you heard from Maddie a little bit of the project purpose and the intent behind this program. We'll review that again, and we also want to go over the future and current service offerings. I know some of you are quite familiar with those, but for any guests we have in the room, we want to make sure that we're being fully transparent. We'll go over the data collection process and then our recommendations, and save some time for open discussion at the end. So as Maddie stated, this project was designed to uncover opportunities to enhance the accessibility of transit services in the region, specifically for low-income and underserved populations in Morrow County, and maximize the county's investments in transportation assets. So we already know that you've made significant investments in expanding transportation infrastructure, so how can we maximize that utilization and accessibility? Some of the specific goals of the program in Morrow County were to increase ridership on existing fixed route and demand response services, so specifically Kaya Public Transit and demand response services being the Loop, Caravan, to name two examples. Improve accessibility of those existing services to non-English speakers or non-native English speakers. Ensure that the services are reliable, especially for employees who are traveling to from perhaps in Umatilla County or elsewhere in Morrow County to the Port of Morrow or other regionally significant employers that are in that kind of cluster, and identify strategies and tactics to encourage ridership on the new service routes. So if anyone is not familiar with the new service routes that are planned, between the Loop and Kayak Public Transit, they will be operating new routes that connect Hermiston with Boardman. And within Boardman, there's the Port of Morrow circular route that will connect the Port of Morrow all the way to the Sage Center with a couple of stops around already pre-identified stops. And this is what we were working with. It was work that had previously been done with the county. Just to show you an example of existing fixed route service options in the area, Kayak Public Transit, based out of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, has routes that are far-fetched all the way up to southern Washington over here in La Grande, but those routes end in Irrigan. So we can connect Hermiston, and we want to extend that from Irrigan slightly over to where that map ends to make sure that those routes are interconnected with Boardman. So what was the data collection process? We hired and engaged with UValkyrie, which is a culturally specific organization based in Ontario that has a long history of working with the Hispanic population in Oregon, eastern Idaho, and southern Washington. And with their efforts, as well as combined efforts with stakeholders that were supportive of the process,
recording stopped.
We collected 297 survey responses. Just to validate, can you still hear me?
Yes, we just have a recording issue.
Okay. Would you like me to pause?
I think we're okay, Grace.
We're having internet issues, and I'm hosting, so when the internet cuts out because of the wind, I'm guessing, the recording stops. They're on a hot spot in here, so the Planning Commission members can still hear you. Just the Zoom recording's done, but we've got the voice recorder, so we should be fine.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. Where did Wayne go?
Oh,
Wayne
is
I'm still here.
Oh, okay.
I think.
Just couldn't see you.
There he is.
All right. I'll go ahead and carry on then.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you. So of those 297 survey responses that we collected, I think it's worth mentioning this was a targeted effort, so we were looking for a specific population, again, non-native English speakers or non-English speakers, as well as low-income residents. 186 of the total survey respondents identified as Hispanic or Indigenous Mexican. 27% of those respondents were between the ages of 35 and 44. While we did see some parity in age groups, we wanted to highlight this one. It was the largest response age demographic and also a very important component of the regional workforce. And 158 respondents identified Spanish as their primary or preferred language. So these were just a few of the demographics that we wanted to pull forward and put your focus on. In addition to those 297 survey responses, we also interviewed 21 stakeholders to provide additional context and kind of color in the lines of the survey. So we connected with school districts, a number of employers in the region, transportation providers, and community service providers that include healthcare as well as public services like the library. So that's what we engaged with on the community level. And after talking to all these people, we wanted to highlight a couple of key takeaways. And so I'll toss it over to Dr. Costi, who is responsible for doing all the data analysis and coding.
Thanks, Chris. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. One of the main questions is we wanted to know more about the challenges and barriers to accessing reliable, public transit or some of their behaviors around how they're getting around. We found that, we asked them about what are the reasons they go with places. It's wonderful that my daughter is now trying to get in my room. My apologies, everyone. But we found that a lot of respondents identified that they frequently have issues getting to work, shopping, or access to medical care were the top, most frequently selected issue that they had issues using or getting to. This is also particularly salient amongst the elderly and those in the lower income bracket, particularly households at or below 50% of the area median income. A lot of responses, sometimes the question directly asked or offered a list of ways in which they identified ways we could improve transportation. We also asked, offered opportunities for them to just kind of talk openly about what were their the barriers and challenges, and reliability to transportation options was oftentimes a theme, regardless of if it was an open-ended question or a closed-ended question. Another piece of the puzzle here is that information seems to be valued amongst those who could potentially use these services, and so reliability, consistency of stops or of public transportation options, but also information can be understood as being able to promote what is currently being available, but also making sure that information is available in more than one language. As Grace said, it was 156 of the 297 respondents were Spanish was their first language or
their preferred. Yeah.
Preferred language. And so a key takeaway, at least for me, is that information needs to be, there needs to be more deliberation over how to get this information out, but also the language with which we are getting the information out.
Thank you, Dr. C. And the reason we've pulled these 3/4, there's a lot of takeaways that can be explored in the full report, is that these three consistently underpin a lot of the recommendations that we're putting forth. So what are some of those recommendations? First and foremost was collaborating with employers to inform and incentivize ridership. Hermiston is a large population center, and we noticed in the data results, and Dr. Costi, you can correct me if I'm mistaken here, but we had a significant number of respondents that identified that they lived in Umatilla County, but also worked in Morrow County. So it's clear there's a corridor, and I think that lived experience in Morrow County will confirm that. We also had a lot of engagement and will to participate on behalf of employers, and so taking advantage of their interest in this issue and participating, we want to take advantage of that momentum. So a lot of the employers are acutely aware of the transportation challenges their employees face. They've actively looked to identify solutions by encouraging carpooling or exploring options like vanpooling. And so our recommendation is to explore public-private partnership opportunities to incentivize ridership, whether that's in vanpooling or reducing risk or incentivizing through friendly competition those who use public transportation the most to get to work. This can also provide a really valuable feedback loop about how the service can best suit folks that are using it to get to and from work. And if there's a question at any time, please go ahead and raise your hand and interrupt. We have some time at the end, but we want to make this a collaborative but interactive presentation. So following collaborating with employers is investing in capacity and increased service reliability. So this gets at the finding of looking for more consistency and reliability that we saw identified in the survey responses time and time again. And so looking at this practically, there's a very large geographic service area and there is staffing limitations. So the loop, which is we classify as demand response or transportation that only comes when it has been requested, so similar to Uber or Lyft. Kaya Public Transit runs more fixed routes, so it runs on a regular schedule. But because of this large geographic area and limited staffing, this can affect frequency and availability of transportation. And so that consistency, especially if a driver's out sick, maybe a certain route isn't running, that is really where the consistency comes in. And that was also self-identified by the transportation providers as they recognize this as a challenge. So investing in additional staff capacity, especially for demand response providers in the region, making sure that there's capacity to deploy buses, but also for the fixed route transportation agencies to make sure that there is staff backup to increase that reliability and consistency of service. Number three on the recommendations was to broaden the scope of service of the loop through brand positioning. So this really gets at the information request that we heard from a lot of respondents. There seemed to be some misperception or misconceptions about what the loop could be used for. And it's important to recognize that similar dial-a-ride services in the region are exclusively for qualified individuals and for medical transportation. So that could be if they're qualified for Medicaid or if they're of a certain age bracket or have a certain protected status, that this service is available to them. We know from the loop's website and mission and vision, it's to serve all residents of Morrow County. But I think there's opportunities for improving that messaging and, again, getting that information out to the community that this service can be taken advantage of by the entire population. So important to doing that is also making sure that messaging is coming out in English and Spanish to address their need for information and also broaden their understanding of how they can benefit from the service. The fourth recommendation that we had is to foster ridership via travel training. So we were looking at ways that folks might be hesitant or nervous about using public transportation. Being in a rural area, it's possible that some folks have never used public transportation. It's not a commonly thought of option for them. And so to reduce anxieties about taking transportation, travel training programs are a great way to help familiarize people with using transportation services, and it equips them with the knowledge and confidence and skills that they need to travel independently. This can also be incredibly useful for elderly populations that might not have experience taking public transportation or who are less familiar with it. So to become familiar with it in a way that is non-critical, so you're not on your way to your first medical appointment or a critical appointment, is a way to reduce anxieties and uncertainty about using services. This also comes into play with language, which we'll get into here on the fifth recommendation, which is to prioritize content in Spanish. Having access to content and information in your native language is also a way that can greatly reduce uncertainty about using services. And we had a number of respondents specifically state that there's not enough information directed at the Hispanic community. So they don't know routes, schedules, or where there are brochures or bus stations. So we recommend, and I know there have been a lot of efforts on behalf of both the Loop and Kayak Public Transit to hire bilingual drivers. and staff members, and that's something that we just want to double down on by investing in bilingual staff to implement multilingual marketing strategies to engage the Hispanic community specifically, so that they have access to the information in their native and preferred languages, which will be really important at driving not only awareness, but also accessibility and use of the services. So Dr. Castillo, I want to toss this over to you, just looking at some of the data that was collected specifically with regards to the location of a lot of the respondents.
Yeah, so we did get a lot of geospatial data, and essentially what that means is we know where people are, well, at least where the respondents are living and working. And so the map that you're looking at here is the western half of the Hopper route. It's about 50 miles long. You may know where the stops are. But as you can see, a lot of our people in our sample live right on those routes. This could be an opportunity, you know, focusing in on that whole theme here, a big picture takeaway of information getting out. This could be a good way of, they're already on these routes. How do we get them to ride? I guess how do we get them on is the next question that comes to my mind. We also, you know, if we do similar studies in these types of areas, we could also be able to really harness that data to figure out exactly where these stops should be. That would be a little bit more of an analytical undertaking,